There's been a lot going on around here. It's raining today. Something died in the wall of my house, a mouse or a rat or God knows what, but that's the best I can ascertain as to why there's this extremely unpleasant smell emanating from the wall of my bedroom. So I had to make a bed in the living room, which wasn't all that comfortable night before last. And then last night I stayed like half the night in the living room, and then I went into the bedroom and the smell was small enough that I was able to sleep in there, which, my God, I've never felt more grateful for a bed in my life. And, you know, I had the windows open all night long. So it was like I was under about, I don't know how many blankets. How many blankets was I under? Three blankets and a down cover comforter. I don't know how many blankets I was under. So I was like in a little cave, you know. And I think that kind of facilitated all the prep. It's just like I woke up in a completely different everything. Like I had to sleep with my head at the foot of the bed because the wall where my head normally is where the bad smell's coming from. And, you know, 2 days ago, I couldn't even go in my bedroom. The smell was so bad. I just left the windows open and the fans on, and I put a towel underneath the door to try to keep the smell in the bedroom. And, you know, I was able to sleep in there last night. So it's getting better. But I think it has something to do with the fact that it was 112 degrees. It was 111 one day and 112 the next day. And then, you know, like 98 or 105 or, you know, whatever the other numbers are. So it was extremely hot here for about 5 days in a row. And I have a suspicion that that resulted in whatever dead thing was in the wall of my house deciding to, you know, go about the decomposition process. And boy, does it smell bad. And like I went under the sink. It's not the sink. It's not the bathroom. It's not the attic. It's just, you know, right by where I sleep. It's really, really foul. And so it's been very kerfuffly around here on that front and other fronts. That's not the only one, but there's been significant things going on. And it's caused me to have to really quadruple down on, you know, everything Elohim has ever taught us. So, and then not even having the comfort of like going and tucking myself in bed and relaxing, you know, it's been in my face nonstop. So the fact that I had 4.5 hours of prep for today's meeting, it seems like par for the course at this point. Let me just give it another minute or two and then we'll start. So it's been quite, you know, as they say, retreat season. It's been quite like a retreat season for me, for sure. And it feels like things are popping off big time. And, you know, my personality has opinions about what should be happening, and those things are not happening at all. And so it's been really, really interesting to experience that in such a deep way on topics that are so sensitive and tender. You know, so like unhealed core emotion feelings, right? So it's been a really intense couple of weeks now. Well, really, since my birthday. It's been really intense since my birthday. So that was the 10th of August, say. Since like the 13th of August, it has been nonstop, top of the charts intense for me around here. And and we're prepping for the retreat. And, you know, my part-time job's on hold. So there's that, all that wacky doodle stuff going on. So there's a list. I haven't even told you all of it because I don't really want to talk about it. So that's what's going on in Sonoma. And it's rainy, rainy, rainy today, which is welcome and surprising. Considering, you know, it was 112 degrees like last week or something. Just is such a weird time. And the weather really reflects it here, at least. Okay, we're going to start. I've already counted. And all right, everybody, thanks so much for being with me. I had good reason to reflect on the fact that so many of you have been around for so very long. And occasionally personality wiggles its way in and bemoans my fate that our community is tiny. And that used to be something that I dealt with nonstop for years, many years. That was a nonstop issue in my life. And it was so painful to be in the truth of that, because I interpreted it as failing Elohim and failing my life's work and failing my reason for being on the planet in the first place. And for quite some time now, that has not concerned me at all. And something about the idea of having the retreat and recognizing, you know, that it's a tiny group of it's a tiny subset of a tiny group of people, especially with you, if you compare it to anything, you know, you don't even have to compare it to the whole world. You just compare it to something like a yoga class or a concert, right? Or the number of people who come to listen to my brother sing. You know, it's a tiny subset of a tiny subset of a tiny, tiny, tiny subset. And for a minute there, that really bothered me. And it really reminded me of how much pain I used to be in about that subject. And then, you know, I was talking to Carrie about it, and she really helped me remember that absolutely doesn't matter at all. She reminded me of how many of you have been unflinching in your commitment to this work and your support of me on this journey. And that was really tremendously powerful. It was really tremendously powerful. So, thank you. Thank you for caring about what we're up to. Thank you about being part of it. Thank you about helping make it happen. And thank you for wanting this for yourselves. Wanting what this is. Giving the gift of that to the world and to humanity and to the universe. It's an extraordinary thing you're doing. It really is an extraordinary thing that you are doing. So, willingness and steadiness and attention to this is deeply appreciated, because I could have blunked along by myself, and even with Elohim's help, I wouldn't be where I am without all of you, right? And even if it was just me and Elohim for all these years, and we had made progress together, it wouldn't look like it looks now. It couldn't. Because what it is a co-creation. It's not just me. It's not just Elohim. So, here we are. Here we are. You know, around about this time, 20 years ago, we had decided to have the first group channeling session. It was going to be next week or whatever, right? We knew we were inviting people to it. I was wrapping my mind around the fact that I was going to do this insanely challenging, freaking me out, completely confusing thing in front of strangers for the first time. Well, the second time, technically, but for the first time when I knew I was going to. So it's an anniversary of willingness for me today. Not an anniversary of doing, right? Not an anniversary of it happened, but it's really an anniversary of willingness. And commit to you right now that I am willing and I see very clearly where personality has been affecting me across my life. And I commit to you and to myself and to Elohim to navigate that differently. And Elohim is going to help us understand how that can be done right now. So let's just have a little bit of a moment with the tissue, and then I will read your comments and we will begin. I'll let Elohim read the comments. Oh, I guess they're comments to me, so I'll read them. Okay. Anya had said many thanks for prepping. For those of you who just showed up, I've been prepping with Elohim for 4.5 hours this morning already. So that's what she's referring to there. Ron said, maybe you have garnered quality for quantity. You know, I've used that quality for quantity, or you know, something along those lines as a way to navigate how it has felt. And I don't know if that's a true statement or not, right? It's at some point it just becomes not as helpful to me to make reasons for it rather than to just say it is, you know? And Ever says, thank you for being here for us all. You're very welcome. Anya says, thank you, love. You showed me why I'm here this time, and this work with you and Elohim is the absolute priority in my life. Ron says, thank you for your dedication and commitment to us all. Susan says, profound willingness anniversary. You're so welcome. Such a gift from you. Nancy says, have so much love and gratitude emanating from my heart to you. Thank you. And Kate says, you have embraced us in your field. Thank you. Leanne says, I'm only sorry I missed the first 10 years. What a beautiful sentiment. Well, thank you, and you're welcome to everyone who is here. And I know those of you, some of you aren't able to type, and so I feel you. I'm feeling you all. I'm feeling you all as we embark on the next phase here. Yeah. So I am going to get Elohim, and we'll see where we take off from this next chunk. Thank you, everyone. Yes, everyone. It takes us only a moment to come because we've been so close all morning long with Veronica working together and engaging with what is as we acknowledge truth, right? In the last couple meetings or so, we have been discussing that now is the time to use foundation of truth. Now, one of the ways to think about the foundation of truth that you already have a big muscle for is the idea of what is true now, right? the idea of what is, the idea of the sense in you that there is a foundational reality that personality distorts and colors and covers up and limits and talks you out of and moves the goalposts on and all those things. But underneath that all, there is a real deep foundation of what is and what is true now, and acknowledging what is really there. What is really there? And the thing is acknowledgement of what is really there happens, and then personality grabs it and messes with it immediately. And because you're so accustomed to the pattern of personality grabbing what is and messing with it immediately, the grabbing the what is gets lost in the conversation. It's gone. It's not there. Because you immediately go from I have a truth to I have what personality says about that truth, what personality will allow me to experience about that truth. And then the next thing you know, the imagining of what is or what is true now is what personality has assessed rather than what you have ascertained outside of personality's influence. And here's the punchline for the entire meeting and probably for the next chunk of meetings. Ready for the punchline? We're going to start with the punchline right up top. And the punchline is, if you are unwilling to abide in deep presence, you will only get what personality gives you. If you are unwilling to abide in deep presence, you will only get what personality gives you. We've spent a very long time identifying all kinds of different ways that personality shows up and influences and affects your life. And we spent that very long time because personality is the greatest showman. It is the greatest con man. It is the greatest magician. And it hides reality in plain sight and then sells you a bill of goods that you use to live by. And you will only get what personality is willing to give you unless you're willing to abide in deep presence. So you get stories, you get justifications and explanations and contortions and make believe and pretend and hopes and dreams and it should be's and bitternesses and angers and frustrations and all of these things that personality uses to take the foundational truth of you and somehow con you into the fact that it's more palatable if it's run through the filter of personality. And we believe that it's become very real in most of you that you're getting the short end of the stick when you go along with that. You're only going to get what personality is willing to give you unless you're willing to abide in deep presence. So it's not being in the moment. It's not being in the now. It's none of that. It's turning in and connecting to deep presence without exclusion, without exception, without imagining that somewhere along the way, there's a justification for stories. There's a justification for projecting in the future. There's a justification for spending time in the past. There's a justification for any of these other things. There's no justification for it anymore. Every temptation to do all those things must be bounced off of and reminded, used as a reminder to return to deep presence. And then deep presence has to be made friends with, not using personality, but using the fact of, if I don't do this, then the only thing I get is what personality is willing to dish out to me. So when you turn in, down and in, we've called it for many years, down and in. When you turn down and in, personality squawks. It says that's boring or that's a waste of time or nothing's happening or you're going to lose focus in your life or you're never going to be able to take care of yourself because you're going to be navel gazing all the time. right? Personality comes up with every reason why down and in, deep presence is a wrong move. Well, the truth of the matter is the reason personality squawks so much is because in deep presence, personality does not exist. So it's fighting for its survival. And it is not on your side. Excuse us. When you go down and into deep presence, when you pivot into deep presence, when you refuse to leave deep presence, even when you have legitimate temptation to do so, when you refuse to leave deep presence, you start to see what it is. You don't know what deep presence is. You know what personality thinks it will be. That's it. That's all you get with personality is you get what personality imagines deep presence is. Unless you refuse to allow deep personality to be part of it. You have to be the one who doesn't allow personality in. Doesn't allow personality to evaluate. When you turn into your heart and you look deep in, down and in within yourself and you refuse the past and the future and you refuse story and you refuse all the other crap that personality has told you is all life is. And then the next, don't forget this step, when it is vastly changed and radically new, you don't run away from it. You don't ask personality to help you understand it. You say, of course it's vastly changed. Of course it's radically new because I am disengaging with personality completely. And when I disengage with personality completely, of course it's vastly changed. And of course it's radically new. Why would it be anything else? And then you take all the things that we have studied together around uncertainty and navigating your nervous system, and you apply it without hesitation and without wavering to embracing down and in, embracing what it's like to be deeply present or deep presence, embracing deep presence, embracing the vastly changed state, embracing disorienting uncertainty, embracing distortion of your experience of time, embracing the radically new perspective, embracing the field of infinite possibilities, all the while not having a single clue what is going to happen, what it's going to be like, feel like, taste like, sound like, how you will feel in it. All of that is unknowable because this is not something you discover. This is an experience, an exploration of the actual first time you are encountering reality. Just like Neo coming out of the pod in the Matrix movie, it was the first time he used his eyes. Of course, they didn't feel good. This is the first time you're actually encountering reality. The first time. The example we used the other day that cracked us up so much was that giraffe being born. When the giraffe hits the ground, literally, that's what, when they get born, they hit the ground. When the giraffe hits the ground, that's reality for the first time. You know, the Christian faith has this line of being born again. They really got there first on that one. That's a really good way to put it. Now, the way they do it and the way we do it, not the same. But the sentiment of you are new now is so real. You are actually encountering reality for the very first time. The rest of it has been make-believe distortion from personality's desire to filter and limit and control and cajole you into experiencing a tiny, 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 tiny amount of reality. And even that tiny amount that you're given, personality completely distorts and rewrites what is actually going on. You've never experienced reality. You've only experienced personality. And it's time for that to end. This morning, Veronica woke up and she had this really interesting sensation in her heart chakra as soon as she opened her eyes. And it was so visceral that there was like this big thing in her chest that it almost felt like it was clogging up her throat. Like she could feel her throat kind of like that, because it felt like it was so visceral and huge and thick and real in her chest that she was like choking on this sensation a little bit. Not in a negative way, but like kind of like, whoa, this is real. Yeah, it is. And the first thing she did was afraid of it. What does this mean? Something bad has happened? Does this mean someone's hurt? Does this mean, you know, bad things are happening? And then to her credit, without any help from us, she said, you know, what if this is not a negative thing? And at that moment, she recalled the fact that she constantly had this sensation when she was a child. She constantly had that sensation as a child. And as a child, she processed it as a sense of like a danger signal, as a sense of it telling her about the world. And she remembers one day she woke up and it wasn't there and she panicked. And then it came back and she thought, oh man, did I reacquire that danger signal and maybe I finally got rid of it? Like there was a real distorted relationship to the reality of her heart chakra being actively engaged with the present moment, actively engaged with this field that we talk about, actively engaged with the non-personality dynamic. Now, of course, she was a kid and she had trauma and she had all kinds of shitty things going on in her childhood. So she was not absent personality, but she was also very, very innocently pure when she was small. And life kind of kicked her around enough that got jaded, but she was very innocently pure. When she was like 7 years old, she would get out of bed in the middle of the night and walk to the front room and put her hands on the glass of the giant picture window they had in the front glass in the middle of the night as a 7 or 8 year old and pray for the entire world. Right? There were things like that going on in her life as a child. And there was also some of the most horrific things that go on in families going on. So it was a real mixed bag. But she had this feeling in her heart chakra. She knows what this feeling is. And now as a grown-up, when she's not having, you know, extreme abuse going on every day around her, she's able to say, maybe, actually, this isn't a warning signal. This isn't a danger signal. This isn't disaster that no one's managed to get through to me on the phone about yet. Maybe this is what they've been talking about. Maybe this is the opening of a new way of being in the world. And so she tuned into it. She looked down and in and she paid attention and she was like, wow, it really looks like a lava planet. It really looks like a spinning planet made of lava that's on fire and beautiful, brilliant oranges and yellows and reds. And it's just emanating out as it spins in my chest, burning away all that is not pure. Burning away. We're telling her that now. She didn't know that earlier. And so that started the day right away, first thing in the morning. Okay, here we go. Now, we're going to start with that. So that launches off 4 hours of prep for the meeting because she said, whoa, hang on a minute. I don't have to process this as danger. I don't have to let personality tell me what's going on. I can experience and explore a revelation of what's real. A revelation of what's real can be experienced and then explored, not controlled or cajoled or contorted. Nobody gets to be a magician and say, look at the left hand while the right hand's pulling a fast one. It's not that. It's saying, choose something other than defaulting to personality and or allowing personality to take over randomly from you. Yesterday. So around here, they chop a lot of firewood. right? Because they have three houses that rely primarily or exclusively on fireplace heat. So they chop a lot of firewood around here. And there's plenty of logs laying about because there's been fires. And so they just collected up all kinds of logs over the years. So they have tons and tons of logs. And they just have to get chopped up into usable pieces. And then the usable pieces come up and Veronica stacks them up into a very, very tidy pile, which is like her very favorite thing to do in the mornings. So of late, meaning the last few weeks, there's been no firewood stacking, which is not the ideal situation because you have to stack firewood when it's warm in order to have firewood when it's cold. That's her little saying that she uses. But a friend of her landlord's decided that he needed some place to park his big, humongous RV. And the landlady, being a kind person, said, sure, you can park it here on my property. And he said, I'll move it in 3 days. Well, it's been at least a month. And where he parked it blocks all the firewood chopping. It blocks the way they had been chopping firewood, where the pile is, how to get to the pile, blah, 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 blah. So it was starting to really jam things up because it's like, it's raining today. People are going to want to start having fires and we don't really have any firewood stacked up. There's probably a cord and a half, but you know, with three fireplaces, that goes fast. So yesterday, a couple days ago, Veronica said to Rosemarie, she said, you know, I know that the boys are supposed to talk to this dude and get him to do something about the motorhome, but we can't like wait. We can't wait anymore. You know, this is going to be an issue. Really soon, this is going to be an issue because stacking of the firewood takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to chop it. It takes a lot of time to bring it up. It takes a lot of time for Veronica to stack it. You know, it's not something that happens in an afternoon. You don't chop and stack six cords of firewood in an afternoon. We don't care who you are. So yesterday, Veronica, you know, there's been a lot going on, as we mentioned earlier, and she was here at the house by herself, and she was actually rearranging everything so she can start using the fireplace again, because for the summer she moved the furniture close to the fireplace just to have a change, and decided to rearrange everything back so that she could be ready to have a fire when it came time, because she knew it was going to be raining. And she was in the middle of rearranging the fireplace, the furniture, and she got the very, very, very strong choice to go outside and read for a little while in the gazebo. And she was like, okay, well, I could probably use a break and, you know, it's going to be raining, so it's a nice day. I'll go ahead and do that. She agreed with that choiceless choice. It's interesting. Sometimes she still thinks about them. But after this one, she's like, okay, we're not doing that anymore. Like, I don't need to process, because who's processing personality? It's choiceless choice. I know what they feel like. I don't need to process them. Just do them. So she went outside, and as she was walking toward the gazebo, the RV that we mentioned earlier was parked right by the gazebo. She's like, the RV is like running. Somebody's started up the RV. And she thought, you know, it's actually none of my business. It's not my job, and I'm not going to get involved in it. And so as she was sitting there reading, the RV is like going back and forth and back and forth. And she was sort of like, are you leaving? What are you doing? You know, what's going on? Because for a little while, the RV, it's so big and this is a hill. And so it was like sliding things. It wasn't good having the RV here. And then eventually the RV turns off and a man gets out of it. And he kind of looks over at Veronica from about 30 feet away. And she's like, still not my business. It's not my business. I'm not going to go over and engage with this guy about his RV. So she sat back down and she'd been reading for, you know, maybe 10 minutes or something. And all of a sudden she got the choiceless choice to get up and go back to the house. So she's like, okay, I'm just going to go get up and go back to the house. She got up, she started walking back to the house and she saw Jim, her neighbor, Jim, the landlady's son, who is, you know, in charge of things around here. And she said, so the guy is doing something with the motorhome right now. And he said, is he taking it away? And I said, and Veronica said, doesn't seem like it to me. And so then he walks over and the guy had already driven his car away, but they looked and he had rearranged the motorhome so that they can access the firewood pile. Now, Jim didn't know the guy was there. And had Veronica not listened to the choiceless choice to go out, at the moment she did, she wouldn't have known the guy was there. And it potentially, who, when would they have known to go look to see that it's okay to start doing the firewood job again? Who knows? So Jim ended up going and doing some firewood right then. Right then. And all of that tied into Veronica listening to the Choiceless Choice. Now, here's the point that we've told you Choiceless Choice stories before. You have your own Choiceless Choice stories. This is not to sell you on the idea of Choiceless Choice. This is to say, we are all going to agree right now. You don't have to type because you can just nod your head. Veronica did not make that guy show up that day. Veronica did not know he was coming. She did not know she should walk out and talk to him or look at him or notice him. She did not know she should walk back to the house in time to run into Jimmy in the yard as he was coming out of his house. None of that did she get shit done to have it do. None of that was, well, I think if I go out of the house right now, the motorhome will be being rearranged. Like, none of that. It's ridiculous to even say it out loud. But we're saying it out loud because this is the point you need to get. And there's no more wiggle room on this. Literally no more wiggle room on this. This is the moment, everybody. Letting you know. You got to get this. You do not control Choiceless Choice. You do not control or make happen tidy timing. You experience and explore and move with their showing up, their revelation, their appearance. You say, yes, I am willing to them, but you are not in charge of them. So when something's going on in your life that you are feeling very, very compelled to be busily trying to make happen or push your force or come up with stories about how it should look or how it should go or when it should happen, you have to stop and say, hang on a minute. What's really true is that there is tidiness here. There is perfection here. There is unfolding occurring. And if you extract clock time and don't allow clock time to tell you how it's really going, you are able then to recognize that an extended tidy timing is unfolding in front of you, and you have no control or influence or anything about it. And that's perfect, because if you had control or influence or anything about it, you would be using personality to do it. And you, if you use personality, you only get the teeny tiniest sliver of reality that personality is willing and able to dish out to you. So you must start looking at these things differently. You must start saying, I don't know what's going on. I know foundational truths. And if I just get into deep presence and stay there, the reality of unfolding tidiness, the reality of revealed choiceless choice will be unmistakably there if I extract the judgment and the weaponization of clock time. Because personality will tell you it didn't happen right away, therefore nothing good is happening. Or it didn't happen right away, therefore it's never going to happen. Or it didn't happen right away, therefore you're on the right wrong track. And if you just say, one, I don't know what it is that you're referring to because I don't try to project into the future. And happen right away is all clock time, which is you weaponizing the clock to cajole me and to beat me and to control me. And I don't know what right is because there's no way for me to predict other than to assume based on the past and about my imaginings about the future. What I can do right now is turn into deep presence and not argue with the experience of deep presence. Not argue with it's boring or it's too quiet or it feels really weird or it freaks me out or it makes me feel out of control. By not arguing with what you discover in deep presence, and by continuing to extract the piece of clock time from all dynamics, you end up dropping into the revelation of the field of infinite possibilities, the visceral revelation of tidiness and choicelessness, the visceral revelation of radical new and vastly changed, the visceral experience of no longer being a slave to personality's whims. We said it to this way to Veronica, and we feel like we should say it this way to all of you. You have been conned into the belief that if you struggle on the surface of the pond, you know, you're splashing around out there in a lake or something, and you're like, I just know the treasure chest is here someplace. I just know the treasure chest is here someplace, expecting it to be bobbing along on the surface someplace. And if you keep splashing around and flailing around and trying not to drown good enough, somehow you're going to lay hands on this treasure chest. When all the while, just mere feet below you, if you would turn and go down and in and endure the vastly changed state of, wow, I'm in water instead of air. Endure the vastly changed state of, I don't know where the treasure chest is. I just know where it's not. Endure the radically new perspective of, oh my God, I'm doing something that like nobody else can tell me is right. The treasure, which is of course, deep presence, field of infinite possibilities, all of that, awareness. The treasure has always been just below you. You just have to turn down and in to it rather than bob along the surface of the water, imagining that doing the same thing you've always done is going to lead to a different result. When you experience something that feels radically different, when you experience a sensation that's totally new, you hesitate because it's totally new and radically different. But the truth of the matter is, a truth of the matter right now is, if you are experiencing the same feelings and the same thoughts and the same experience, the same emotions that you've always experienced, personality has you. Personality's got you. Because you're just doing the same thing you've always done when personality has had you. You've got to be willing to experience different things, think different thoughts, feel different ways, feel radically changed, feel altered, feel distorted, feel disoriented. You have to be willing to go through the transformational process. The caterpillar does not feel the same as it becomes a butterfly. It must allow for different sensations to occur. If it does not, if it is unwilling, well, it doesn't turn into a butterfly then. You've got to be willing to change. You can't have change without it. You must be willing to feel odd, to feel unusual, to feel disoriented, to feel distorted, to feel radically different, to feel vastly different, to be able to say, I don't know, as a point of beginning, not as a point of fear. It won't work unless you do this. And we've already, you know, chipped away all the loose marble and we've done all the things. And now we're at the point where it doesn't work if you don't do this part. You have all that you need. You have all the prep. We've put all the tools in place. We've laid the energetic foundation. We've crafted for 20 years a foundation for you to stand on. So in this moment, you would not be alone in this. You have muscles that we have built up over the years to use to turn down and in and surrender into deep presence and be willing to face the uncertainty and the disorientation of new feelings and new thoughts and new experiences and have different judgments and evaluations of the now than you've ever had before. You are prepared. You have been given what you need. And now it just has to be that you stop doing it the old way. You just have to stop doing it the old way because the old way will not take you any further. You will continue to spin in circles where you are and not ever experience what reality actually is and what reality is actually offering. You will never experience that unless you're willing to go through the crucible of transformation and you're willing to hold on to deep truths without letting personality tell you what those deep truths mean or are or how they should look or where they're going to show up or what the timing should be or any of it. You have to be committed to applying yourself steadily and consistently and without fluctuation to this. Because that's the point we've reached. It's been 20 years. Now we're here. Now we're here. You don't make tidiness occur. You don't make choiceless choice happen. So when things are going on in your life that are challenging and difficult, or when you feel like I'm ready to do something new, a new job, a new house, a new lover, a new whatever, you can't imagine that you have to work to do it, to make it happen, to push and force, get shit done, go for it, because then you will only get the personality aspects of it. You must instead be willing to say, that seems like a truth, and then go to deep presence. I need to brush my teeth. Go to deep presence. I need to go to the bathroom. Go to deep presence. I'm really sad today. Go to deep presence. I'm really happy today. Go to deep presence. It doesn't matter what's going on. Because you're either going to continue to play the personality dance and dance with personality and play the personality game. You're either going to do it that more and more and more, or you're not. It's not that often we give you a binary choice like this. And guess what? Today's the day. You have been years in the making to be able to be empowered and ready. We've used years of teachings to really illuminate to you what personality actually is, how it shows up, where it hides, where it's sneaky, where it's all the things it is. Not so that we can continue to give you examples for the next 20 years, so that we can say, now it's time to not live that way anymore. Steadily, consistently, without exception. And not as like a, woohoo, check out me, I got it right this time. No. Not even that. Not even a pat yourself on the back kind of a thing. Because it won't matter. Those things won't be your evaluators when you're actually in it. When you're actually in it, you won't need to evaluate it because it'll be reality. It'll be duh. It'll be steady. It won't stand out to you. It won't be something you have to acknowledge of like, wow, look at that. That doesn't always happen. Yes, it always does. There is a constant state of unfolding ahas, constant state of unfolding bliss, constant state of unfolding does, a constant state. That the fact that you get one here and there and here and there and here and there has been great up till now. But now, that is an insufficient experience of it because the other experience is available to you. Where your movement, we used to say from bliss to bliss and aha to aha. But now we like to say you will be in a tidy timing revelation. A tidy timing revelation without end. This is how we can say every now is now. It's all in this moment. Because a tidy timing revelation without end doesn't have like these peaks of experience separate from other like not so great times, and then peaks of experience separate from other not so great times. It has a consistent, steady, revelatory engagement because every now is rich and full with tidiness and choicelessness and a whole bunch of other things that we haven't even gotten to yet. As we said to you before, the tidiness and choicelessness are the low-hanging fruit. Those are the most obvious and easiest ways to access this. That's why we have been emphasizing them so vigorously for so long. But that's not even the end. What did they say at the meeting last time? It was something like, that's the same as like a choose your reaction to your creation tool, right? It's not even in the intensity of some of the tools we've done. It's a workhorse tool. It will become so obviously duh. You will exist in a steady state of that. You will not live the way you live now. You will actually be in reality. Turning down and in, focusing on deep presence, not making excuses for the moments when you want to focus on the past, the future, the stories, the contortions. when you want to distract yourself from the deep presence, because the deep presence feels like, oh, I don't know how the deep presence feels. Well, get familiar with it and don't let personality evaluate it. There's an experience and an exploration to have. You can't continue to let yourself live outside of deep presence. You can't continue to let yourself live outside of deep presence. Normally, at this point, we would ask you to talk. We're not going to. We don't want to hear what you have to say. Not because we don't care about what's going on for you, but because we don't want to hear personality at all in any way, shape, or form. And it would be very difficult not to offer something that invokes personality, because we've just set a new standard for whether it's personality or not, right? We've just set a new standard for whether or not it's personality. So almost anything you say would still invoke some personality. With the new standard, not so much. So what we're going to do is we're going to drink some water, and then we're going to get Mags, because Mags has a message for you today. And we may come back. So we may not, but we may. We don't know. We'll see. Ah, hello, hello, hello. All right. So earlier today, we were talking to Veronica about a few things. And one of the things she asked us is, so you've just been hanging out in deep presence for the last 2,000 years, right? That's really what you've been doing. And the answer is yes. That's really what we've been doing. For 2,000 years, as you count time, we have chosen to abide in deep presence outside the physical body, yet deeply, deeply, deeply connected to the journey of humanity, and offer an energetic support to the matching energy, if you like to call it that, of deep presence. It's no coincidence that we came into your circle when we did. Matching energy to our ability that we have mastered over the last 2,000 of your years to abide in deep presence. We couldn't control or push or force anything that went on. And trust us, there was plenty of times when we saw the distortion of Jesus's message that we wished we could make some changes. When we saw how women were treated, when we saw how children were treated, when we saw how societies twisted and contorted the words that Jesus said and the actions he took in order to justify harming each other. Trust us, there was times when it felt like our role was to try to figure out how to push and change and force. However, we had committed to a very different way of being part of the journey you're on. And that was to stand aside and emanate deep presence and hold the doorway open so that no matter how far humanity got away from the truth of a non-personality life, there would be a beacon for you to follow back if you only found it. A beacon to the truth. Not the truth of religion or the truth of the Bible or the truth of any kind of church teachings. No, we're not. That's not what we're about. What we're about is the beacon into a personality-free state. The exact thing Elohim just spent the last chunk telling you about. We stood as a beacon saying, it is not our role to push the levers of humanity. It is not our role to incarnate and attempt to be a transformational force in the body. It is not our role to do any of that kind of personality-driven action. It is our role to stand as a beacon, holding open the doorway, the portal, the opening, to the reality that a personality-free life that still has a gingerbread and runs around on Earth is actually a possibility that you can pursue. And the energetic of deep presence, the energetic of resonance, the energetic of emanational emanation of truth, not of facts, not of opinions, but of truth, is within your grasp. And to get it, you don't have to do, you have to surrender. You have to let go of, you have to discard, you have to set down, you have to strip away, and you have to be willing to engage with disorientation and distortion and vastly change and radically new and all those other words. You have to be willing to change. You have to be willing to see things with new eyes, to feel things with a new feelings, and to be steady in the face of that transformation. You have to engage, not push, not force, not demand, not say, this is the way it should be because this is the way it should be. Instead, you say, what is, and then surrender into. Deep, deep, deep presence. And when you discover what's in deep presence, at first, it is likely to feel extremely weird. And in that moment, everything that Elohim has helped you with has to be brought to bear. You must pivot into, and I know what to do with weird. I know what to do with uncertainty. I know what to do with change. I know what to do with the fact I am a chooser. I know what to do with this, which is to do nothing. Don't engage with it. Don't try to change it. Don't try to assert any will, because the will you would assert is the will of personality. Instead, you surrender into, you drop down and in, and you abide. You abide. All the energy that you have about changing the world, pushing, forcing, changing people's minds, shaking people's shoulders, making things happen, making things be the way you want it to be. All of that energy you need to repurpose into, every single time you have those urges, you repurpose that into down and in. Focus on my heart. Be present. Don't distract myself from anything other than what is. Follow choiceless choice. Know that tidiness exists. Revel in the unfolding perfection, even if it looks like paradox. You're not trusting anything to unfold the way you think it should, right? Let go and let God and you'll get a Maserati, right? It's not that. You're not saying, I trust this will work out, or this will get better, or this or something better, or any of those things. You are instead acknowledging that any projection whatsoever about how it should go, how long it should take, what it should look like, feel like, taste like, smell like, seem like, who it should involve, is all based in the limiting perspective of personality. It's only what personality is willing to dish out to you for it. You're only getting scraps, and you're never going to get anything vastly changed if you stay on that road. You must instead commit to the absolute unknowable nature of this, the absolute unknowable reality of the unfolding. The only thing you can know is that you are choosing down and in and deep presence rather than continuing to play personality's game. It's all you know. And you're going to take every stimulation that wants you to go out, and you're going to turn it down and in. over and 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 over until it's a duh, and because until it's natural in you. Until it's obvious, until you default there. Just like you started to default to choosing your reactions to your experiences when previously you were defaulting to victimhood. You've already done it. You know what it feels like. You've got the muscle. You can do this. You just have to apply yourself. And every time you have experiences that are the same as they were before, feelings and thoughts that the way they were before, you are not in presence. Because even if it's something, let's say it's something lovely, like you're in your garden and you're looking at roses and you're like, oh, I just love the smell of this rose and it's such a beautiful color and look at how gorgeous the plant is and it looks so lovely against the blue sky and the green grass and you feel like this is just blissfully beautiful. You're still only experiencing what personality has allowed you to experience, and why would you settle for that? Even in the best moments, you're still only experiencing what personality has allowed you to experience, and why are you settling? And that's a really important question to legitimately ask yourself. Why are you settling? Because you are. We're going to get Elohim. Okay, we're back. We are back. We're not sure there's much to add. We really are not sure there's much to add to all of that. It's really a time where you have to be willing. We will take questions if they're questions. We won't take statements. So if you have a question about what we just described, if you have clarification you need, we're willing to entertain that. But we do not want to just hear statements about, well, you know, last Tuesday that happened to me. Don't, no, there's no room for that today. If you need clarification about what we just described, if there's a part of it that doesn't feel like you can really hold on to it, we will open for questions now. Otherwise, marinate. You're welcome, Nancy. You're taking fundamental truths as a starting point. You're refusing to allow personality to evaluate them. You're refusing to allow yourself to try to manipulate them in any way. And you are using them as a jump-off point to drop down and in into deep presence. When you get to deep presence, you do not evaluate it. And try not to get scared by it or confused by it. Recognize anything new and different is what I have been seeking. And then you allow for the truth of the perfection of the unfolding. Even if clock time seems to be not agreeing with that truth, you set aside that influence and you acknowledge the reality that is, I am in the unfolding and I, as a personality, have no way of knowing, predicting, or controlling how this revelation occurs. My job, my place, is to experience and explore as a witness, as a chronicler of what is. Ron says, how is the experience of the rose and its beauty and fragrance personality? It's personality because the only evaluator you've ever had of it has been personality. So if the fragrance of a rose, you smell it and you say, I like this, I love this, it feels good, it's whatever, whatever, whatever. You are getting 1/1,000,000th of the experience that's available to you. Because that's all personality ever gave you. And even in that moment that you can say is wonderful and beautiful and delightful and all those things, it's still just really good personality because it's only what personality has ever offered. It is not reality. Just like in the Matrix movie, what happens? They're driving along in the car and Neo, it kind of makes a little, and Trinity says, what? And he says, that place has good noodles. Right? So he used to go there. He used to eat noodles. They were good noodles. That was his noodle shop where he liked to go. And what is the truth of it? It was all fake. It was all a computer program. It was all his mind being manipulated. It was never reality. It wasn't real. It was an illusion, a good illusion, an enjoyable illusion, a powerful illusion, and it was still an illusion. The experience of the rose can be very, very profound, and you can enjoy it and be happy that, wow, that, you know, this is a powerfully positive experience for me, while still acknowledging. And I know that the depth of this experience has been withheld from me because I have settled for personality's interpretation of it. What more is there if I drop down and in and get deeply present in this now that I'm sharing with this beautiful rose? What more is there when I don't hold this rose in comparison to other roses or hold its fragrance in comparison to other fragrances or imagine that maybe just tomorrow it'll be open a little bit more and it'll be more aromatic? What happens if I go down and in without distraction and without editing by personality? What more is there? And you're not in charge of figuring that out. You're in charge of being willing to actually do it. Being willing to actually show up, be an experience, be an explorer, and be there. That is the answer to your question. Does anyone else want to ask a question? Remember, don't make statements. Don't talk about what happened yesterday. Do you have a question and need clarification of what we have shared today? That's what we have openings for. And if no one does, then we are going to go. Susan says, a newly formed butterfly also has to strengthen its new wings, pushing against the cocoon to open it from within to be able to fly. This is true. If the cocoon is cut open from outside, the wings will be too weak to use. Yes. This feels like a relevant metaphor, though there's an apparent paradox of strengthening willingness muscles, yet also surrendering to what is already deeply unfolding. Can you elucidate? Okay, so as we understand it, the way that works is that when the butterfly is pushing out of the chrysalis, the pressure the chrysalis exerts on the butterfly's body actually pushes fluid into their wings. So their wings don't work because their wings have not been filled with the fluid. So the actual exiting of the chrysalis actually empowers them for flight. Right? So there's this idea of the willingness to exit and the recognition that the act of exiting creates the next chain, the link in the chain of transformation. And it's not arguing with it. The butterfly doesn't get to say, I don't want to push really hard against the edges of the chrysalis. I don't want to do that. I shouldn't have to work this hard. It shouldn't feel this way. It shouldn't be like this. It shouldn't be difficult, right? The butterfly does what the butterfly does, but you as humans, you would argue. You would say it shouldn't be like this. And you had no idea what life experiences are actually the same as the chrysalis pushing on your wings to fill them with fluid so that you can actually use them to fly. Personality tells you anything bad is wrong. And yet, you only have the perspective of personality on these things. And personality uses clock time to convince you these things are true. You haven't heard back from them. They haven't called. You haven't received the email. You didn't get the letter in the mail. And all of that means bad, 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 bad. And you have no idea what's going on elsewhere. And if you want to play that game, you can, but you're giving away moments that you could use it to be in profound presence as everything unfolds. The way we've been talking to Veronica about it, because she's in a situation in her life where some really powerful things happened and then they all stopped. An example that she has given you is she got this new part-time job. She really likes it and it stopped for a variety of reasons, including the funding hasn't come in yet. So there's no money to pay her, right? So everything's kind of on hold. But there's other things along those lines that are in this exact same scenario. Amazing, 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 dead stop. And of course, her get shit done side wants to push and force and make it happen. And she's been trying that and it didn't work. Trust us. And so now she's like, you know, put on the brakes. None of this is working. I'm suffering. And I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And all of this teaching, this entire conversation, all of the hours we have spent over the last couple of weeks with her on this, and it has been considerable. To come to this point today to be able to say to you with absolute clarity, this is the way that personality is messing with you. So if nothing else, all of this stuff that's going on in Veronica's life that has been extremely difficult gives us this, right? The pushing of the fluid into her wings gives us the opportunity to fly with you today. And that's just a smidgen of a smidgen of a smidgen of what it actually gives. But the idea is, well, the funding needs to come in so that I can start working, so that I can get paid, so that I can feel safer about paying my bills. Who says? Who says that's ever going to happen? Who says that's the right thing to happen? Who says anything? And who says that as those gears mesh together and move the workings forward and tidy timing plays out without a focus on clock time in it, who knows what will happen and what is possible? And you can dream up all the things you wish and thought and maybe should be's. Or you can take all that energy and turn it into the down and in. Turn it into deep presence. And allow for, oh, I need to go outside. And then the guys work in the motorhome and you would have never known if you had not gone outside at that moment. Ron says, after all this time, I still don't know, get how to go down and in. What do I do specifically? This is so important. I don't want to not get it. Well, it's not surprising that you don't get down and in because, you know, it's one of those things we've talked about for a long time, but we haven't actually broken down into step by step, because breaking it down into step by step would just be like giving personality more weapons, right? So down and in is actually not an action. It's a choice. You choose to not do something. You choose to not think about the past. You choose to not dwell on favorite familiar sufferings. You choose to not dwell on the future or project or presume. You choose to recognize that when you find yourself in disorientation or uncertainty, that you don't resist it as though it's wrong, bad, horrible, but instead say, what if I just got present with it? Now, one of the examples of this that we've used recently is when Veronica was very, very ill. You know, we've told you many times, one of the things that she would do is just say, fine, what if this is the way it's going to be forever? I'm just going to interact with it as if I will constantly have this level of pain for the rest of my life. Now, it's ludicrous that that would have been the truth. But before she started going to see any doctors and get any relief, and she was just dealing with it on her own, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and she's thrown up 7 times, and she was in level 8 excruciating pain and couldn't even, you know, barely keep her eyes open, and she was on her own, what did she choose to do? She chose to say, what if I just said okay? That's down and in. Now, when she finally said, this is okay, she also realized, and I need help. I need a lot of help. It's not okay to try to navigate this on my own anymore. And the fact that if I go to the hospital, the bill is going to be so big, I might have to declare bankruptcy and all those fears, I am not going to actually focus my attention there because that's all make-believe. What I'm going to do is, what is the truth? The truth is, I need help. And she got to, I need help, when she went down and in by stopping being in the, why is this happening to me? What am I supposed to do? What can I do to fix this? Who, you know, what? She went from what to, okay, fine, yes. And then okay, fine, yes led to, and I need help. And the consequences of getting help, the financial consequences primarily of getting help, aren't going to be the driving decision maker in this. And then she ended up getting financial aid. And so, you know, she's ended up spending maybe $1,000 on copays and medicines and stuff before she got the financial aid kicked in, and they paid the rest of it. So she didn't have to declare bankruptcy or anything like that. She didn't even know that they had financial aid. She didn't know she would qualify for financial aid. She didn't know how to apply for financial aid. She didn't know a damn thing about it. All she knew is when she laid on the floor just over there, 7 feet from where we're sitting right now, and said yes, and went down and in, it was clear that she could no longer care for herself. And you can say, like right now, we could all just look at that and say, okay, if, you know, we're omnipotent and we step back and we look at the whole thing, we can see where the condition started, where the condition stopped being a huge, huge, huge problem, the whole arc of the journey of it. All of that was true. That whole arc was a possibility. Every bit of it riding in the air in the Uber on the way home as the sun was coming up, you know, meeting a doctor that gave her some hope that she won't be in debilitating pain with her back for the rest of her life. That came out of it, right? Getting a mammogram and going through that whole process of them saying, we got to keep an eye on your left breast. Okay. Like that whole arc. Changing her diet, losing 15 pounds. That whole arc, like all these things that could not have ever been known, came from the generating event of her saying, down and in. Now, she chose this sort of ridiculous notion of, I'm going to just have to suck up that this is my life from now on, and I'm going to be in this level of eight pain and, you know, barely be able to function for the rest of my life. That's how she got there. And you don't have to do it that way. Not meaning you'd have to go through that pain, meaning you don't have to kind of like talk yourself into it. You just say, I'm thinking about the future. I'm going to be deeply present. I'm thinking about the past. I'm going to be deeply present. I'm making up stories about what's going on with so-and-so. I'm going to be deeply present. I'm fearful about how this is going to turn out. I'm going to be deeply present. Not deeply present with your fear, with your pain, with your uncertainty, with your confusion. Deeply present with the now. Just go now. Stay now. Refuse to let yourself be distracted. And let what bubbles up, let the choiceless choice, let the tidy timing be revealed to you. And then move with them, even if they generate that sense of, holy crap, what am I getting into? How big of a bill am I going to have to face down? Or whatever your version of it is. Does that help? And does anyone else have a question? If you don't have questions, you can start saying goodbye. And Ron, we do want to hear if that sunk in, you know, does that seem like it will be something you can use? Ron said, absolutely, it's more about what not to do. Yeah, it's not to let personality run the show. And, you know, we can say that to you now, not don't let personality run the show. And you have so much context for that, right? It's very fractal. It's very deep. It's very meaty. But if we had said that to you 3 years ago, you'd be like, okay, I won't let personality run the show. But it wouldn't mean anything because you didn't have enough history with the concept of personality to be able to illuminate where personality is actually running the show. It's taken a long time to be able to point out enough ways that personality is active. You know, we had people a while ago be like, when are you going to get done talking about personality? I've already got it. I know everything about what you're talking about. And it's like, okay, we understand why you're saying that. It's not true. It's not true. Because look at how much personality we found in clock time, right? We can pick anything and we can find personality in it. So it's not about dallying with every way that personality shows up. It's about finally saying, I agree that this is a real thing. I agree that it's a real dynamic. And I also agree that I'm ready to be out of it. And then you get out of the dynamic rather than fight it off one by one by one by doing what we just spoke to Ron about. Anya says, thanks for everything. Leanne says, answer to Ron helps a lot. Thanks and bye. Okay. Kate says, lots of juice to marinate in. Thank you. You're very welcome. If you're typing, you need to let us know because we are going in very, very short moments here. Tiffy says, thanks for the push. You're welcome. Nancy says, thank you. Oh, Tiffy says, thank you for the push energy today. Yes. There's a big amount of clarity happening right now, and we wanted you all to be part of it. Okay, we are going. So, oh, the next meeting, let's see. Today is the 18th of September. So the next meeting is the final meeting for September, which is the 28th. It's a Wednesday night, the 28th. Then, what's really interesting is we are going to have a meeting on the 2nd of October is the first Sunday. We will have that meeting. And then we have the retreat, the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th. And even, it's hilarious, Veronica has not circled any other dates in October because she was well aware that she does not know what the later part of the month will look like. So let's just say for October right now, we're going to do the 2nd, the 7th, 8th, 9th, and then we will let you know what the schedule for the rest of October will be because traditionally the retreat has really required Veronica to recover from for a chunk of days. And we don't know if that will happen this time. And we don't know how many a chunk is. So the rest of October is to be determined. But at this point, we have a meeting on September 28th, October 2nd, and then the retreat is October 7, 8, 9. All right, everyone. Much love.